So, hello, welcome to another episode of Pop Fishbowl. I am your host, Ezekiel McAdams, and I also have with me...
I'm Kelly Creighton, a.k.a. Kaya White Sapphire.
Let's dive into Jurassic Park.
Okay.
Yeah. So, take me back to the beginning, because what I find really interesting and cool about you is that we both love this movie. Jurassic Park is probably, on my list of at least top five favorite movies. I wore out my VHS, and I think you did the same.
Oh, yeah. Well, I accidentally at one point ejected the VHS tape in the middle of the movie because I was, like, going from one TV, one room to another, so I was taking it to the other TV, and the tape stayed out, and the door came down on it. So it was the scene where Dennis Nedry was stealing the embryos.
Ah.
And so that part of the VHS always went fuzzy. After that, I was like, no! I pried the door back open and was, like, reeling the tape back on. But I actually saw it originally opening day in the theater. My mom's work was organizing a thing where a bunch of the coworkers were going. And so I went with a group of, like, 12 or 15 people, something like that. So,
and yeah,
I saw it. I saw it in the theater about 8 times.
Yeah, I remember you saying that. And I think I told you, like, I wanted to, but my mom was convinced it was going to terrify me, and so I was not allowed. And it was even more awkward because that was the theme of one of our neighborhood kids' birthday parties. The whole birthday party went to Jurassic Park, and then because I wasn't allowed, I basically got to come to the aftermath, which was the cake and the presents. Which, just, you have a bunch of, like, 10-year-old boys coming back from this movie, and they're all, like, amped up, and they're talking about things that you have no idea, no context for. It was just, like, one of the most disheartening events, and I held it against my mother for years because, yeah, you know, I just wanted to see it. And finally, like, the VHS came out, and my dad and I, we went to Edmonton, Alberta, because the Rolling Stones were playing at one of the... My dad's a huge Stones fan. And he bought me the VHS. Like, kind of, like, as a gift, I guess, for coming with him. Because it was sad. He wanted someone to go with him. And I just wanted to get out of school. I could care less about the Stones. I was like, I can get out of school for 2 days? Yeah, I'll come with you to Rolling Stones.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah. And apparently the concert was really good. I have no memory. I could care less. But I did get Jurassic Park out of it and a Goosebumps book, and that is my memory of that trip.
Nice.
Yeah. So...
Worth it.
Totally worth it. So before you saw Jurassic Park in theaters, how big was your love of dinosaurs?
Interestingly, so my love of dinosaurs had always been huge. My love of Jurassic Park had not always been huge. So
interesting.
The book, namely the book. So, only insofar as my parents told me when they started filming Jurassic Park, so that would have been, you know, 91, 92, that they were filming it. And I said, oh, what's that about? And they told me, and I just was totally disinterested and did not read the book. Didn't seek it out. Wasn't, even though I was, you know, had been interested in dinosaurs since I was little. I guess I wasn't really obsessed with dinosaurs at that point. So, like, I was interested in them, and I always thought that I probably wanted to be a paleontologist or a geologist or something like that. I wanted to be a geologist when I was little because I was like, oh, you can find crystals in the ground. That's nice. I want to find crystals in the ground, right? So, but it was, like, 3 days before the movie dropped, and suddenly I was like, okay, I have to read this book. And I started reading it, and I only got about halfway through, and then we went and saw the movie, and then I finished the book. And, like, I was so totally hooked at that point. So, I guess I was always interested in dinosaurs, but not a fanatic, and became a fanatic after that.
Did you like raptors? Because you love raptors. Did you like raptors before the movie and reading the book?
No, I had no idea what raptors were before Jurassic Park.
Okay. Did you have a favorite dinosaur before then?
Dinosaurs, yes. But okay. I guess I knew what raptors were. Like, I knew Dromaeosaur, and I knew that John Ostrom had discovered Dromaeosaur, and that was some of the biggest evidence for hot-blooded, or at least warm-blooded, dinosaurs, Dromaeosaur being slightly larger than actual velociraptors. Velociraptors are about turkey size.
Yeah.
Dromaeosaur is a little bit bigger than that, maybe wolf size. And so I was familiar with raptors like that, but, like, wasn't super into raptors, wasn't, like, super into any dinosaur specifically. Like, if you had asked me what my favorite was, I guess T-Rex, you know?
Yeah.
But from Jurassic Park onward, it was actually not even Velociraptor, it's Utah Raptor specifically, which is not featured in the movie, although Utah Raptor is closer to the dimensions that were actually portrayed. They never showed the full body of the quote-unquote big raptor in Jurassic Park 1, so I'm not sure if she's actually... I think her dimensions are supposed to be similar to a Utah Raptor because we literally discovered Utah Raptor around the same time that Spielberg was doing this movie, and they were almost going to name it Utah Raptor Spielbergi because of that. And, like, when Robert Bacher, Bob Bacher, my favorite paleontologist, actually got a call from someone saying, hey, we found this raptor, and he got excited. He's like, hey, you found Spielberg's raptor. So I think they're similar in size, but since I haven't seen her, I can't comment. But, like, the raptors in Jurassic Park 3, definitely that's very close to Utah raptor size, so bigger than human.
Yeah. What I found really cool is just your extreme excitement and adulation towards raptors, and how when you got out of the movie, you wanted to be a raptor, and you know, went around and... Because as I've told you prior, like, we would have been, like, the greatest friends at that time. Because that's what I did, too. Like, I mean, raptors aren't even my favorite dinosaur, but I loved them in that movie.
Yeah, and I love how they get more and more bird-like throughout the movies. Mm-hmm. So I just... So in preparation for us recording this, I did go through and watch all four movies again.
Okay.
And at the end of Jurassic Park 3, I thought... Yeah, Jurassic Park 3 is my favorite. And then at the end of Jurassic Park 4, I'm like, still can't, between the two, still can't. Mm-mm. It's because I love Jurassic Park 3 and 4 for, like, some of the same reasons, but also some different reasons. Like, Jurassic Park 3 really tugs on the feels for me. There are a lot of parts that really, I connect on an emotional level. Whereas Jurassic World is just a whole lot of fun.
Yeah.
It's just such a fun movie the whole way, and I do like how they respect the raptors, and I love that they slipped in the line from Henry Wu, where he said, if you wanted reality, many of these creatures would look very different, but you didn't want reality, you know?
Yeah.
So there are a lot of things about all of the movies that I love, and I know there's things that people dislike about all of them, but that's okay.
That is okay. So let's go into your feels. So I also tried to watch. I fell short. So I had some work that came up. I have a contract that I'm doing all summer, and my employer, my boss, phoned and said this needs to get done. So obviously that took priority. So and I woke up later. So my plan was to watch all four of them, like, back to back, and so it'd be, like, so fresh in my mind it hurt. And I made it to basically as soon as, like, you were ready, I was 2 minutes into Jurassic World. And that's what was so nice, because you're like, hey, I'm gonna be late, I need to do all these things. And I was like, oh, thank God, honestly, because I've got like 20 minutes of Jurassic Park 3 and I want to finish this. So
nice.
Yeah. So yeah, so let's go into that, because with Jurassic Park 3, I think I've only ever watched it 5 times.
Okay.
It was the only one of the series so far that I didn't see in the theater, because I eventually did see the first Jurassic Park in the theater. So that was the only one I didn't see, and watching it now, I enjoyed it more than the previous times, but I want to hear about why you like this movie so much.
Well, the main reason is because of the raptors.
Yeah.
They're beautifully designed, they're intelligent, they're social. Now, in reality, raptors probably weren't actually that smart. They probably were actually about as smart as turkeys, which is not to say dumb. That's fairly smart for everything that was living at that time, but they weren't problem-solving, language-using, you know, primate dolphin-level intelligence. But for the movie, that's what the creatures they designed. That's cool. I'm happy with that. And they're just beautiful, like, physically, the way they move, the way they were designed, just the creature effects themselves are beautiful. And I love the bird-like movement that they gave, to all of the dinosaurs. There was something that I was watching where they talked about how, if you look at the Gallimimus herd in the first movie, their tails kind of droop down when they come off their back. And for the new revised Gallimimus herd in Jurassic World, all of their tails swoop up to be more like alert and bird-like.
Interesting.
So that's really cool. I also really, I mean, I like the language development that they did. You know, the raptors are actually talking to each other, even though the resonating chamber that they what are those things called? Because it wasn't 3D printed, but it was carved from that machine. You know, that's nice, but that's a solid object that's trying to represent something that was flesh. So Alan Grant blowing through that thing, would no one would ever assume for any reason that it would make anything as close, anything anywhere close to the sound that a raptor would actually make. But whatever, it's fine. You know, it's plot point, and it was cute, and I like that, you know, he's starts trying to use it, and call for help, and so he changed. So it's fun. It's a fun plot point. I'm not mad at it, but the part that really gets me, like, that makes me feel the feels, isn't even about dinosaurs. It's when they're on the river, and the Spinosaurus is attacking, and they have enough juice for one phone call, and who does Alan call but Ellie? And when she finally gets the phone, and all Alan has time to do is scream, "Ellie, save me, the river." And that's it. And it's like, I'm token up now, because it's like, can you imagine getting a call from someone who you love and having them scream, "Save me, the river."
Yeah.
And that's it. And it's like, oh, shit.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like, that's, to me, it's like, because I'm very empathetic, so I put myself in that situation. It's like, you get that phone call, it's like, oh, my God, I've got to save this person.
Yeah. It's interesting that was exactly the point I was at. When I was hoping that I would have more time, because that really, and that's the one thing that has always resonated with me when I think of that movie. I always think of the birdcage part, and then I always think of that phone call. I think initially one of the reasons I didn't like the movie as much is because I wanted more Ellie. I've always loved Ellie Sattler, and I just wish that she was more prominent in the movie and more of the movies in the franchise in general.
Yeah, although I think they would have had to shoehorn her in. I don't know. I mean, she wasn't really appropriate for this particular adventure.
Like, yeah.
They don't need to bring that many extra characters along, but... And I love Laura Dern, and I totally... Everyone who says that she was not appropriate to cast in Star Wars can... They can have their opinion, that's fine, but I totally disagree. I think she was awesome, and I am so sad that she's dead now, so...
I think it's, like, just, it's my personal opinion that it's appropriate to cast Laura Dern in anything.
Yeah, I know some people don't like, I've often heard the phrase, they're so famous and they've been in so many things that I can't disconnect them from, I always see the actor, I can't lose myself in the character because I always see the actor. I don't understand that mentality, because... I mean, they're all actors. Let's remember that. They are all actors just doing their job. And a lot of them don't even care about this character. Like, when they get their paycheck, they're done. You know, no offense, but they really don't even... You know, they're just doing this because they need a paycheck.
Yeah.
And, like, this emotional investment that you have in this character, a lot of times they don't have that.
Yeah.
So, you know, they're just doing their job. And to be like, oh, well... I can't lose myself in the character because I know their face too well. It's like, I'm sorry. I don't know what to tell you. It's like, learn to disconnect, you know, to separate reality from fantasy a little better, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah, I think it was kind of like what we were previously talking about, where you have these, like, quote unquote super fans, where they have kind of taken ownage of this thing in their mind. And I guess it really is a testament to Laura Dern and other actors, not only in Jurassic Park, but other franchises in general, that their performance has become so iconic in certain people's minds. Because, yeah, when I see Sam Neill in things, I do think of Alan Grant.
Oh, yeah, sure.
But that being said, he's in a lot of great things where he's not even anywhere close to Alan Grant. And same with Laura Dern.
Yep. Oh, what did I see him in recently? He just popped up in some... Oh, Game of Thrones!
Yeah,
playing okay. one of the like little play actors in Game. I'm like, holy crap, that's Sam Neill.
Yeah,
I like Sam Neill.
Yeah, me too. And he was also in Thor Ragnarok as well. I don't know if you've watched it yet.
Oh, we just saw that. Who was he in Ragnarok?
So there was this scene where they had like Sam Neill and Matt Damon, where Loki is putting on a show because he's pretending to be Odin.
Oh no, that's what I saw. So it wasn't Game of Thrones. That's okay. What it was. It was Ragnarok, not Game of Thrones.
Maybe he was in Game of Thrones as well. That would be cool.
No, probably not. That was just, I just remember him being in a play-acting costume, and I thought my brain immediately put it in the Game of Thrones universe, but you're right. That was Ragnarok, my bad.
Yeah. But no, so I, one thing I was going to ask you about, because just, I always love how sometimes our opinions can differ, and you also have different insights on things. How do you, like, and especially this is more relevant to me, and I've noticed it more because I watched basically all three movies back to back, aside from like the 45 minutes I had to work today. What do you feel about how they all sort of find a way to get the characters back, where it usually involves like a loved one, or in Jurassic Park 3 case where Grant is kind of tricked? Because for me, that's always sort of bothered me. As much as I love seeing the characters, it always felt to me like, well, we really need a sequel to Jurassic Park.
Well, to me, actually, I didn't feel like they saved characters just because they wanted a sequel. They did change quite a few deaths from the book. So, like, from in the first Jurassic Park book, John Hammond dies.
Yeah.
Muldoon does not.
Right, Henry Wu, I forgot, dies about that.
I did just recently read it, but there are a couple side characters that I'm not sure if they died, that they definitely died in the movie, but it's like, and different characters played different roles. So like, instead of the lawyer, Gennaro, being with the kids in the car, it was actually Ed Regis, who's like the park manager. It was a different character entirely.
Interesting.
So it's like, you know, they made a whole bunch of different changes between the book and the movie. And I honestly never got the, I mean, you could be right, but I never got the impression that they were saving characters just to make sequels. I felt it was more like, because that's what people expect.
Yeah.
You don't expect any of the main characters to die unless it's under very specific circumstances. Like, I mean, look at what they did with Carrie Fisher. They had the perfect opportunity, with the actor having passed, to let that character die and then not have to do any CG work or anything. And they're like, nope, we are keeping this character in, and then we will kill her when we need to. But it's like, they're very, movie studios in general are very hesitant to kill main characters. Look how you know, they did finally kill Data in the last Star Trek Next Generation movie. You know, so I just think it's because they're just reluctant to kill people in general.
Yeah.
Characters that people like, because then that pisses people off, and they feel like they didn't have a good experience.
Yeah.
They leave the movie feeling sad and angry, and then they don't want to go see that, you know, that kind of movie anymore.
So they need to
make sure people leave happy, and they liked the movie, and they had a positive experience.
Yeah, see, and that's something that I hadn't thought of. I just kind of thought of, like, from the character's perspective and the world building, because sometimes my brain goes there. I'm like, you know, would Malcolm really go back, or was, like, you know, so did they just insert a character that would give him that motivation, because otherwise you have no movie for Lost World? Is just,
well, Jurassic Park The Lost World, the second movie, was actually based on, Michael Crichton did write a second book,
yeah,
specifically to make a sequel off of, and he did make up this daughter.
Okay.
Actually, was it even his daughter? I don't think it was. I think it was a student. Okay. It wasn't related to Malcolm at all. She did end up on the thing. I could be remembering wrong. I think I read that book once and was like, okay, I got it.
It might
have been his daughter, but I do feel like, and you know, okay, so he's going for his daughter and his girlfriend. Okay, I didn't really have a problem with the second movie so much. It's more like when you think about the death toll for the third movie, you know, what did we have? 3 adult men from the Kirby team, plus the vast majority of the InGen team, all died. They did manage to get, they did plus one on the way back, though, with the kid, but, like, they minused a whole lot. It does feel like there's, like, a really severe imbalance of what was spent and what was gained, but, you know, what are you gonna do? Parents will do anything for their kids, so. Yeah, and I, of course, then with all of the helicopters and the tanks and everything pulling up on the beach, that's just a really fun shot. I enjoy scenes like that. What was the movie? Mars Attacks. That was hilarious.
Right.
And I love the scene where they've got all the military driving out. It's just, that's, in movies where you're not actually dealing with war, when that is either overkill or kind of a silly situation or whatever, I tend to like when that kind of thing pops up. I think it's fun.
Yeah.
So
what else do you like about Jurassic Park 3?
Well, I don't know. Raptors and the emotional bits are kind of all I'm digging for in there. It's like, I know why people don't, you know, people who don't care for it, I know why they don't care for it. Although I think the characters are wonderfully acted, I think there's enough character depth and development for what's necessary. And, you know, it's like, okay, some guys get killed before you really care about them, but they're really just there to show you how the monster works anyway. I think they gave you plenty of time with the people you were supposed to get attached to. I know some people feel like there either wasn't enough character development or they just didn't like the characters. I know a lot of people really did not like the scene where Alan was dreaming and the raptor was talking, and they were like, oh, it was stupid. And I was
really?
Like,
people
don't
like that? It's a dream.
Oh, okay. There are so many people that have a problem with that. Oh, my God. Talking raptor is dumb. It's like he's dreaming. It's trying to show you what he's thinking about because it's going to set it up later when the raptor actually starts calling for help, and then when he does the calling for help thing. They're trying to set up the language thing, and he's dreaming. And people have a really big problem with it. It's like, I'm sorry you have a problem with this, but I think you really need to not have a problem with this.
And see, what I really liked about the movie, it was actually, I think, beneficial to this, to watch them basically back to back, because obviously the first one is my favorite, just due to nostalgia, and like the worm, I don't know if you saw my tweet this morning, but like just watching that movie for like what, the millionth, maybe billionth time, it just gives me warm fuzzies. I can quote the movie verbatim. I know exactly what's coming, but I just feel really good every time I watch it.
It's, yeah, me too.
It's like, this is stupid, but it's like seeing family or friends in a long time.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's comforting. It's a comfort zone.
Yeah. But was really,
I'll tell you,
oh, sorry.
Oh, sorry. Go ahead. No, go ahead.
Oh, no. I was just going to say, for the third one, what I really appreciated, watching all of them back to back, was that unlike the second one, where I didn't like that, I felt that they were bringing characters back, Alan had a really good story arc where he really didn't want to go, and then they basically tricked and kidnapped him into going, and he had grown as a person, but felt like Ellen Grant. Like, maybe it's just my own silliness, but I didn't like Malcolm in Lost World because he sort of felt like a different character from the first one.
Yeah, I can see that. He definitely seemed somewhat different. Yeah, I agree.
Yeah,
whereas I do feel like Alan Grant was Alan Grant in both movies.
Whereas, like again, maybe it's just me, but like the thought that I got when I saw it as a kid, and even like it came out 21 years ago, was that they were like, okay, we've got to make Jeff Goldblum an action hero in this movie. And so, like, Malcolm has the leather jacket in the first one, but his glasses are gone in The Lost World. He just sort of, I don't know, maybe I'm reading too much into this, but he kind of just evokes coolness or
Well, to be fair, this is a character who has gone through some serious trauma and also is now mocked by the public, so he has lost a lot of his coolness. So maybe it's appropriate that he's kind of different and he's lost his swagger.
Yeah.
But that doesn't necessarily mean that I like that version of the character either.
Yeah. So that was my thing. Sorry.
The one thing that I would say I do not like about, and it's consistent in all of the Jurassic Park movies, is all the screaming.
Mm-hmm.
Which, I get it, you know, scary dinosaur people scream, but the women, of course, tend to scream more than the men, and I, like, not all women scream. Like, I don't scream in reaction to stuff. I actually tend to be very silent in times of stress. You know, and it's like, I usually am like, okay, quick reaction, get out of the situation, and then I might, like, break down and, like, cry afterwards if it was super stressful, but, like, I never scream. And so this idea that every woman in every scary or startling situation has to let loose this blood-curdling scream, it's like, seriously, why? Not every character has to do that every single time, please.
Yeah.
So that's, and it is very excessive. Like, Taya Leone, her poor vocal cords. Did I say her right name?
I think so, yeah. Yeah.
Her poor vocal cords from Jurassic Park 3, my God, she was screaming and screaming and you know how many takes they do for these things, so our poor voice.
Yeah.
And, you know, you watch them and it's like, okay, who's, you know, Timmy does some screaming in Jurassic Park 1, but it's mostly Lex. I don't actually think Ellie does, she does a little bit of vocalization, but not really a lot of screaming, thank goodness.
Yeah, it's more restrained.
But then Sarah Harding and Kelly in Lost World did a whole bunch of screaming. And of course I have a plethora of problems with plot holes and problems with the Lost World. I still like the movie, and I like the raptors in the movie, and I'm not mad at the movie, but there are so many problems with the Lost World.
Me too. I can't wait to get to that.
But, so, a little less screaming, I think, would be good.
Yeah. Hashtag not eliminate. So, yeah, so speaking of Lost World, let's get to the plot holes.
Here's a big one. If Sarah Harding is fully aware that T-Rex has the second largest olfactory bulb in the animal kingdom, then she would know very well that walking around with a shirt with baby T-Rex blood on it that's not drying, that's getting on everything they walk past, would totally be like just leaving a scent trail. Like, you know, you're telling me nobody has a spare shirt that they can give her. There's no other clothing that she can wear so she can take off the T-Rex, baby T-Rex smeared blood, and that she doesn't even think to say, hey, I need to change out of this, guys, you need to give me another shirt. Like, they could have, even if it was like, if they needed to leave that trail, then it should have been like, she said, hey guys, I need another shirt, okay, we don't have anything for you, so she gets in the stream and she's like trying to scrub as much of it off as possible. You know, like, at least have the character who has been arguing for this entire time that T-Rex is a nurturing parent and have a really good sense of smell to not leave a blood trail.
Yeah.
As they travel. I mean, it was just, it's stuff like that. Or, like, in the High Hide, what the hell was that attached to, that it's 100 feet above all the other trees? Yeah. Like, I know some trees are slightly taller than other trees, but I'm like, that was so far above everything else in the canopy. It's like, what the hell was that attached to? I don't know, I'm blanking on other ones. There are things that I like about the movie, like where she says, you know, they've got the baby T-Rex in the car and they're driving through San Francisco or Los Angeles or wherever the heck they were, and she's like, we need to let him get closer, and he's like, and Malcolm says, no, I don't think so, you know, and or the how's he gonna know if the baby won't make any noise, and the T-Rex roars, and they're like, he knows. You know, it's like just little lines like that that I think are fun. But so many plot holes that were unnecessary.
Yeah.
Oh, like the boat crashes into the dock. The boat's bringing the T-Rex back. It crashes into the dock. Why? That wasn't really addressed. Why did it crash into the dock? Because in the book, it crashed into the dock because there were raptors on the ship and it dismembered the crew. And they hinted at that because someone said, where's the crew? And the guy said, all over the place. So they were dismembered. How did that happen? Oh, you never said anything about how that happened.
Yeah, I noticed that too.
The crew is all dead and they crashed the ship in the thing and yeah.
Because the T-Rex was still in its compartment, like it was open,
yes.
But he was still there, and so they didn't address if there were raptors or any other creatures that got loose and ate the crew, where were they? Because they would have been on the ship as it crashed into the docks.
Or they could have bailed off earlier, and now they're running around in town as well.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So it's, oh, so many mistakes were made. And I mean, mistakes are always made in movies, but ugh.
But yeah, those glaring plot holes that really take you out of the movie.
I do very much like the scene where the T-Rex is coming through customs and like a bunch of cop cars and like animal control drive up and they see the T-Rex and they all slam on the brakes and throw it in reverse. That's hilarious. So again, a lot of fun moments, but there were a lot of things that were just unnecessarily stupid.
Yeah. Did you feel that when you saw the movie the first time?
I don't remember, to be honest. I am very aware that all of my memories tend to mush together, and I'm not really... Sometimes I am very sure of how I felt at a specific time, but in this case, I don't know if I noticed all of that the first time.
Yeah.
There are a bunch of mistakes in Jurassic Park, the first movie, that I didn't notice the first time that I now know that are huge, but you don't really think about it when you're watching it.
Yeah.
But I know I enjoyed the movie overall. I don't know if I noticed those errors.
Okay.
But the more times you watch it, the more glaring they become.
Exactly. I remember watching it with my dad, because this time I actually was allowed to see a Jurassic. I was older, and I was allowed to see it in the theater, and my dad took me, and that was really nice. And there were still three things that I really enjoy about Lost World. It's not my favorite Jurassic Park movie. It's okay. But I loved the scene with Malcolm and Hammond at the beginning of the movie where Hammond is trying to reassure him. And he's like, don't worry, Malcolm, I'm not making the same mistakes. And Malcolm's like, you're making all new ones.
All new ones, yeah.
I love that line. Every time I watch that movie, I burst out laughing. I'm sure probably my neighborhood heard me because my laugh was loud this morning. And I've watched that movie several times. It's not like I don't know it's coming. So I love that part.
But it's funny.
Yeah. I love that part. I just love their interaction and the chemistry that the actors have. I loved the T-Rex scene in San Diego when it's just running amok. Like, I just love that. It's a silly little thing that just gives me a lot of joy. And I loved the character of Sarah Harding. I thought she was really cool. I wish she was given a little more to do, but the idea of that character and the way Julianne Moore portrayed her, I really liked.
I do very much like that character, and I really enjoy Julianne Moore as an actor. It was not portrayed in the movie, and I don't know if you knew, but Sarah Harding, the character, is actually the daughter of, I don't remember his first name, Dr. Harding, the vet from the first park.
No, I didn't know that. Like, the vet that, like, Ellie met with the...
Yes.
Ah, the Triceratops.
Yes. Huh. So, Dr. Harding, which in the book, I believe, was a stegosaur, not a Triceratops.
Okay.
But they felt the trike would be more visually stunning for this shot, I guess. But so, that vet, his daughter is Sarah Harding, which is specifically that character that became that was the paleontologist that went to that island. So, obviously, they didn't touch on that at all in the movie, but... Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, that's too bad. That's a missed opportunity. Because, like, in the movie, she was just like, she wanted to go because she had heard all these stories through Malcolm, even though he was trying to tell them, like, with horror and mayhem. She was just like, oh, cool, dinosaurs. But if her dad was originally part of the team,
I don't know. Like, I don't remember from the book if, like, she knew about the dinosaurs from her dad or if, like, he had signed an NDA and she didn't know about the dinosaurs, so I don't know that that actually is different. I just know that they are related.
I'll have to read The Lost World sometime. I've read Jurassic Park, of course. I read it after I, like, became obsessed with the movie, but that was also, like, 20 years ago. So my memory, I just remember, like, that Hammond died because that wasn't in the movie, and I remember the river scene, because that was also not in the movie, and thinking, man, that was really cool. Why wasn't this in the movie? Those are my two memories of the book.
Gotcha. Yeah, Hammond dies because the kids are playing with the PA system and do a Tyrannosaur roar, and he gets scared, so he runs and trips and falls down a hill and breaks his ankle.
Right.
And then the Compsognathuses get him and kill him in the way that the guy dies in Jurassic Park 2.
Huh.
So there's a lot of stuff in Jurassic Park 2 that they mined from the actual Jurassic Park first book, like the scene on the beach with the little girl. That's the opening scene of the Jurassic Park book. It's not a rich couple. It's a scientist and his wife and his kid, but they go drive down to a beach, and it's not, and the reason it's not a rich couple is because it's not out on site B. It's on, like, a Costa Rican beach. Like, raptors and compies and stuff have gotten to the mainland, but of course they don't want to touch on that in the movies. So, but they did mine a whole lot of stuff from Jurassic Park, the book, for the second movie, as well as stuff from the second book.
Yeah. So before we go back into your nitpicks of the first Jurassic Park, and then we'll touch on Jurassic World, you had said in our previous pod that you don't like Ian Malcolm.
I don't like his monologues in the Jurassic Park book.
Okay.
I'm not crazy about the character in general, either in the book or the movies. I definitely do not like his monologues. He is kind of a different character in the book. He's more... intellectual, heady. Like, he's giving these really long speeches. Like, of course, Malcolm in the movie does a little bit, but, like, if they tried to replicate in the movie what he did in the book, people would just walk out of the theater because it's so boring.
Right.
I'm sorry, but it's so boring, and it's so long. I mean, he goes on for pages about chaos theory. It's just like, ugh. I know, I have to imagine he was doing that to get the point across that Malcolm is verbose, and I know that he was trying to also educate the reader and really talk about chaos theory and make it understood, but I just felt like it was too much.
Right, it was like extreme pontification.
Yes. And as for the movie, just, you know, the attitude, I'm always on the lookout for a future ex-Mrs. Malcolm.
God, I hate that. So. Grant and Ellie were always my favorite. But I really liked Malcolm, and I liked Jeff Goldblum's portrayal. But the older I got, the more I was really turned off by a lot of his behavior. Like, constantly hitting on Ellie is, like, beyond gross and creepy. And that the line about the Mrs. Malcolm, like, that just, ugh, yeah.
It's very disrespectful. Oh. And, like, even if the character didn't really mean it seriously, it's still a shitty thing to say.
Yeah. So. And it bothers me because I'm just going to imagine that the male writer kind of thought that was sort of cheeky and funny.
Right.
Right? And that...
I'm sure.
Yeah.
It was definitely played for a laugh. And I just don't think it's funny.
Yeah. No, neither do I.
Interestingly, Alan Grant did not find it funny either.
Yeah. Which just makes me like Alan Grant even more. I love Alan Grant.
I mean, really big glaring error with Jurassic Park 1, for example... in the book, the T-Rex does not push the car over the side of a cliff. The T-Rex picks the car up and throws it into a tree. Now, I guess they figured they couldn't do that logistically. So the T-Rex pushes the car over a cliff. The problem is, where did that cliff come from? Because wasn't the T-Rex standing there a minute ago with a goat?
Yeah.
Where did that cliff come from?
You're right.
That whole area where the T-Rex and the goat were standing are gone, and you can tell it's the same spot because the fence is torn down. So in the section where the fence is torn down, there's this huge-ass moat. Now, it could be that the car actually got moved so far that it, like, down the road that it got pushed to another section where there was a moat, but that was not at all clear. What it looked like is T-Rex eats goat, drops goat leg on car, tears through fence and starts the car is right where he comes through the fence and then pushes that car over a now cliff.
I have to go rewatch the scene by scene, because you're right, and I'm mad that I've seen this movie a billion times. How have I not even...
It's something that doesn't click, and then you watch and you're like, wait a minute. And there's like another minor thing with that scene which I'm actually not mad at. Alan Grant has Lex on his back, and he's like, grab the wire. And it's like, when the car finally falls, obviously it's a composite shot. When the car finally falls, his leg is still sticking out. There was no reason for her to need to grab anything, since he was already to the side, with his leg sticking out, that would have gotten completely smashed and cut off by the car if that had actually been a real shot. But I know that's a really difficult shot to do, and I can forgive that kind of thing. But like, the, where did the ground go, and where did this cliff come from? That's I feel like that was poor design. That should have been handled differently.
Yeah.
Although, obviously, people just don't notice it. So I guess it was the right decision, because nobody notices it until you watch the movie, you know, 100 times.
Yeah.
But they definitely got their money's worth out of that shot, I guess.
But, I guess even more so than that.
Stegosaurus is spelled wrong on the labels. On the embryo, Stegosaurus is spelled wrong. Oh. Just little stuff like that. Oh, so when they're first arriving at the island, they're descending, you have the shot of the helicopter descending, and when you see that shot from above the helicopter, of the helicopter descending, there's the Jeep that's going to take them around the park, and it is backed up as far as it could possibly go. There's no backing up more for that Jeep. It's backed up. And yet, once the helicopter actually lands and the people are stepping off the helicopter, you see the Jeeps backing up. So again, just bad cutting or editing. When Ellie's turning on the power, she's in the shed, she's got her blue shirt on and then the pink shirt over it. The next time we see her, she doesn't have the pink shirt on anymore, and it's like, well, what happened to that you know, I mean, I guess she could have taken it off, but that's just kind of weird that it's suddenly not there anymore. Gosh, there are so many, little incongruence, just things because of cutting, like that, just because of editing,
yeah,
that showed up. But again, you can't be mad at it. I mean, it's a big production and it's really hard. So little stuff like that, it's just like, well, you know, stuff like that happens in movies. I don't like when they make decisions where it's like, okay, this is actually a really raging plot hole that, yeah.
Yeah.
Anyways,
I really love the character of Ellie Sattler. As a kid, I was always mad because I wanted, like, an action figure that had, like, an action chop or something, and never had one. And I loved her little monologue where, like, Grant and Malcolm are in the car, and they're like, you know, God defeats man, you know. And then she's like, woman inherits the earth. Yeah, it's still one of my favorite lines. I had, like, the biggest, like, shitting grin this morning. And again, I've seen this movie, like, billions of times, but it never gets old for me.
Was it you? I saw someone that had tweeted or passed through my attention, someone that actually got a tattoo.
No.
Woman inherits the earth. Okay, so yeah, it's got, I think a T-Rex, a Triceratops, and one other dinosaur, and then it's, like, got a banner that says woman inherits the earth. It's pretty cool.
But I feel like I should. Thanks for the, you know, thanks. Yeah, I should have that.
I also like where they're sending Ellie and Muldoon out, and they're handing out the walkie-talkies, and Hammond's like, well, but really it should be me going, and she said, why? And he says, well, because I'm a,
yeah,
and you're a, and she's like, look, we can discuss sexism and survival situations when I get back.
I love that. I love that. It's just one of the reasons why I just love Ellie.
Well, and that was 1993,
yeah,
you know?
Yes.
Yeah. It was pretty woke back then.
Pretty woke, yeah. You know what's funny, too? I was thinking about it. So the first time I watched the movie, when my dad finally bought the VHS, and I hadn't read the book yet, I thought that Nedry and Hammond were father and son, because he makes that kind of dismissive, like, thanks, Dad, you know, because he felt that he was being...
Oh, yeah.
And I just, as a 10-year-old, I was just like, oh, they're father and son, right? And then it wasn't until I watched them more, I'm like, oh, no, he's being dismissive and sort of patronizing. And one of my other favorite lines that I still use in life, especially, and I love Hammond's line to Malcolm when Malcolm is tapping on the video camera and saying all the things that the park doesn't have, and Hammond just is like, I really hate that man. That's a quote that I use.
Yes.
So what else did you love about the first movie?
Well, I mean, it was obviously a very good movie, and the special effects were amazing. So, I mean, like, there's no arguing that the original Jurassic Park is just a great movie. But, I don't know, I liked dinosaurs, and it just kind of captured my imagination. I love that they did not show the dinosaurs as stupid, lumbering beasts, but showed them as active, you know, not necessarily intelligent, but active animals that are, like, not just stupid eating machines. Like, not even sharks are stupid eating machines. People misportray these animals. Like, they are all creatures, and they have differing levels of intelligence, but none of them are just mindless monsters.
Yeah. I always liked, too, how the dinosaurs would eat people that were not necessarily evil. I mean, they were evil, but it was basically, you know, sort of this kind of ode to, well, you got in the way of nature, and this is the consequence. And I've always liked that about the Jurassic Park series.
I do feel like it was a lot like that in the book. I mean, Malcolm did die at the end of the book, just due to his injuries, and he was the only one that had been kind of railing against the park the whole time that died. Pretty much everyone else that died had basically, and it was kind of funny because if you read through it, it's like you can tell the moment when Michael Crichton has signed the character's death warrant, because they make some flippant comment about how nature doesn't matter and we're in control or something like that, and it's like that's when you know they're about to die.
I always love that in media when there's just, they do something really not stupid but just telling that, you know, oh, they're talking about something. Or, like, I can always tell on a TV show when they highlight a character that has really never, ever been highlighted, and they give this really big emotional material for them to work with, and they've never done that prior, and then I'm like, oh, this person's gonna die. And for me, that just ruins the suspense. I wish that they would give them the emotional material before, so the death would have more meaning and weight.
Right. Not just, oh, I'm getting a little taste of this person now, so, you know, they die at the end of this episode. It's like, no, you need to give me a little bit more than that.
Yeah. Speaking of just, like, the feels that gives, the other thing I love about Jurassic Park, and again, it could be my bias because it's one of my favorite films, but I just really like all the characters, even the ones that are just awful, like Nedry. I just like all of them. I like the chemistry between the main characters. Everyone, albeit small, like, what's his name? Henry, the geneticist, Henry Wu?
Henry Wu, yeah.
Yeah.
Played by David Wong, I think?
Yeah, B.D. Wong, I think? Yeah.
Or B.D. Wong.
Yeah, just does a really good job with the little that he's given, right? Like, I love Muldoon. My love of Muldoon has grown the more viewings of that movie.
You know, now that you say that and I'm thinking about it, I think, I don't know if B.D. Wong read, well, I'm assuming he read Jurassic Park, but that's not necessarily the case, but I feel like he pulled more from what you learned about the character in the book, because he wasn't given a chance in the first movie to really, you know, give us an exposition for his character. But I think he conveyed what he could, but I think in Jurassic World, he was able to express the kind of hubris that Wu in the first book expressed.
Yeah.
So kind of gave him a chance to do that.
But I just love that, though, that, like, with as little as he got, you know, he felt like a character. Like, it just, the world felt so real.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
And developed. And I always appreciate when movies can do that, where it just, these people feel real, the world that they're living in feels real, aside from the little filmy nitpicks that you had mentioned previously.
Right. Yeah. Oh, and, like, when they're first going on the tour, and, like, Hammond's up at the front, it's like, oh, I've got lines. It's a fun scene, but that is not scalable. What? So, how many shows are you doing a day? Is this your job now? Are you going to be doing this from open to close? Or are you only going to have one group of 10 people come through once a month? I mean, seriously? Are you standing there for every presentation? I don't think so.
Yeah.
That was a little silly. Like, I get it, again, exposition for the movie, but that was a little bit, because, like, no park is going to function like that, unless, again, he's only going to do this for his close friends, but he even said, everyone in the world, it's like, well, dude, you are not standing there for everyone in the world.
Yeah. He may want everyone in the world, but like, yeah, you're right. The more times I've watched that movie, then it dawned. I think the first two or three times, it just didn't occur to me. I'm like, right? And then the more I watched that, I'm like, no. Like, I was thinking, I had that exact same thought while I watched the movie this morning. I'm like, yeah, there's no way.
Yeah, I mean, the first time you're watching it, you're just experiencing the movie and it's fun. And then on subsequent watchings, you start, you know, because you have absorbed the surface level stuff, you start absorbing the deeper stuff, and then you start thinking, wait a minute.
Yeah. And, like, even Samuel Jackson's character, because at that time when that movie was filmed, so it was probably filmed in, like, 91, 92, it came out in 93, Sam Jackson, for lack of a better word, hadn't really attained his Sam Jackson-ness.
I actually looked it up because I was curious, and Pulp Fiction had not come out, and he had just been basically in, like, made-for-TV stuff up until that point. So it's funny, because this was, like, his first really visible role in a visible movie, and he's so not the Sam Jackson that we know.
No. But at the same time, he still got those quotable lines. Hold on to your butts.
Oh, of course, yeah.
Right,
still pretty quotable, just a much more timid character than I'm used to seeing him play.
Yeah, I was actually thinking today, like, I was kind of like, had a fanfic in my head of like Paul or Ray. Is it Ray Palmer?
Ray Arnold.
Arnold, thank you. I don't know where Palmer came from, but
Arnold,
like,
Palmer, probably.
Probably, but I was thinking of, you know, Arnold and, like, Nick Fury meeting.
You like crossovers a lot. And I noticed that you really enjoy doing crossovers.
Yeah. It all goes back to like when I was a kid and stuff. So just, I think it's my imagination too. I always think of the what if scenarios and the variables and stuff in between. Yeah. I'm weird.
I just think it also shows that you just have a love for these things and you like seeing the things that you enjoy together.
Yeah. So yeah, in summation for Jurassic Park, I just love it. It is one of my
I do love the movie.
It is one of my absolute favorite movies. I've gotten the chance to see it 3 times in the theater because like the first time, I think I probably told you this, but like we have a digital film festival as part of our theater chain, like our big theater chain, where every year they pick like 20 kind of classic or cult movies and they add it, and like it was about 5 years ago and they add it like Jurassic Park, and of course you could tell my excitement at the time when it was announced because I finally got to see that movie in the theater. And it's been re-released several times. They did it in like 3D, I think, in 2013, and then they've shown it one more time, and I've gone like every single time. And it just, there's such a huge difference from even if you're watching on a big TV in your house to watching it in the theater.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah.
Well, that's cool.
Yeah. So, lastly, I guess, two things of the franchise before we go into Jurassic World. So I think I tweeted this to you many, many months ago, but like thoughts on the canceled animated series. I found out today there was 2 of them that were canceled.
I actually have no knowledge of these whatsoever. Okay. So I have no emotional reaction because I didn't know about them.
Okay. Apparently, the first one was going to come out right after the movie, and it was called Escape from Jurassic Park, and it had all the main characters. So you had Grant and Malcolm and Ellie and Hammond and Tim and Lex. And basically, they had just made like a story bible of what was going to happen, and they had drawn several storyboards.
That's cool. There was a comic book, like a graphic novel that came out that I actually purchased much later. I mean, not when the movie came out, and I don't know when it was done, but it actually focuses on them several years after the first movie. So like Lex is a she's, you know, a woman now, and she's an entrepreneur and a activist for on behalf of the dinosaurs, like an animal rights activist, and like Tim's grown up, and it's pretty neat. But I did not know there was gonna be an animated series. That's cool.
Yeah. And then apparently I just found out today there was another one. It was called Chaos Effect. And it was also just proposed and for whatever reason canceled. So I think as an adult, I'm okay that there was never an animated iteration of Jurassic Park. But as a kid, I would have ate that shit up. I would have been so excited.
Oh, I'm sure I would have consumed it. But yeah, it's probably fine that it's not in the world.
Yeah. So yeah, I guess that leaves us with Jurassic World. So you had said this is like one of your favorites.
Yeah, so it's between Jurassic World and Jurassic Park 3. I know there are some people who are horrified by that. I know that there are people who love Jurassic Park 1 and then think the rest of them are terrible. And Jurassic World is, like, one of the worst in a lot of people's opinions. It's like, yes, it's a big, action-y summer blockbuster. But I love it. I mean, yeah. I think they did a... It's like, okay, so yeah, could you remember the 2 kids' names at the end of the movie? No.
Yeah.
Does it matter? No. That's not why I watch these movies. You know? So, I'm watching this movie to see dinosaurs go run around. I don't really care what the kids' names are, to be honest.
Yeah.
So it's a different kind of movie. Like, Jurassic Park, you get attached to the characters. You have emotional attachment to these characters. You feel something. That's not what Jurassic World is. It's a different kind of movie.
So, like, Jurassic World, the one thing I really liked about it, and I'm excited to watch it for a second time because I've only ever seen it once after we finished talking, is that I like the idea of the theme park actually being built and finalized.
Open to the public, yeah.
Yeah, I thought that was that's a really cool way to take this franchise and this world. And I liked Owen. Maybe it's just my love of Chris Pratt, but I liked Owen as a character. I liked... oh, God, you're going to have to help me out because Claire? Is it Claire?
Claire, yes.
Oh, wow, okay. I'm impressed with myself. I liked her as well.
I did, too. And you know, people made a big deal about her in heels, and it's like, well, that was the character, and the movie production team made a big deal about the fact that she's going to have appropriate hiking boot footwear in the next movie.
Yeah, I was going to mention that, which I thought hilarious. I thought people made too big of a deal of that.
And then, of course, there's a big deal about, I have blanked on the actor's name, and I feel horrible because I do know it, and I can't remember, but the actress who plays Claire is getting is getting paid less for Jurassic World Fallen Kingdom, or got paid less in Jurassic World than Chris Pratt, and it's like, it's called star power. It's not because he's a dude. I mean, that is a thing that happens, but in this case, I would say it's more like, because he's the one, you know, he's more drawing more people to the movie. He's the bigger star. In Passengers, Jennifer Lawrence got paid more than Chris Pratt.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like, there is definitely a pay discrepancy, and there's a problem in Hollywood with that, but, like, I feel like people jump on that wagon a little bit too often when there are other reasons. But as far as the movie itself, again, I'm just watching it for fun dinosaur action. I love the raptors. I'm not crazy about the fact that the raptors suddenly, like, it looked like they were literally having a conversation with the Indominus Rex and then switched sides. That was a little ham-fisted, in my opinion. But that's okay. Plot point. They just needed to get that done. Okay, fine. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, speaking of people's grievances and nitpicks, I'm curious for your take. What did you think of the scene where Owen is on his bike and the raptors are kind of all in a pack and following him?
Running with him. That was fun.
Okay. Because a lot of people really disliked that, and that was the reason, oh my god, this movie's going to be terrible.
Oh, I can't remember how my dad had phrased it. He had said something like about how that's totally unrealistic. Oh, like, I think when he saw it, because it was in the preview, and I think when he saw it, he thought that Chris Pratt's character was trying to run from the raptors, and he's like, that's stupid. There's no way that a motorcycle could outrun raptors in a jungle. And I'm like, he's not trying to outrun them. He's running with them. And I think a lot of people, like, saw the preview and didn't realize what was going on in that scene. But I thought it was fun. I really liked, are you familiar with the YouTube channel How It Should Have Ended?
I have, yeah.
So they I love all of their Jurassic Park episodes, but the Jurassic World episode is hilarious. You know, all the flying pterosaurs and ramphorhynchoids coming towards them, and the guards are like, huh. You know, and it's like, gee, good thing we planned for this contingency with all of them having, like, zap thingies, and then we can push a button and just zap them, right? Like, you know, didn't you plan for this? Or, like, you know, zoos have been a thing for a very long time, and we know how to do, like, trenches and moats and all this stuff to keep animals contained, and it's just funny that in these movies it's, like, the worst zoo ever. Like, oh, why is it in the Indominus Rex enclosure that the only way to get out that side of the enclosure is to open the big door? Why is there not a human-sized door on that side of the enclosure?
I forgot about that.
Again, it's just a fun, hey, dinosaurs, yay.
Yeah, exactly. Another grievance that a lot of people had at the time was, like, too many nostalgia throwbacks, you know?
Really?
Yeah, because, again, it's the movie came out 2 years ago. I've only watched it once. And I realized today, unlike Lost World and 3, this one stuck with me. Like, this was the one that I was like, okay with if I didn't watch before our podcast. Because, like I said, Jurassic Park 1 is, like just ingrained in my memory. The second and the third one's not as much. But I had no problem with, like, the seeing, like, the old Jeep and, like, the old logo and stuff throughout Jurassic World, like...
No, I didn't feel like they were even doing that for nostalgia's sake. I mean, they kind of, I guess they paused on it a little bit into the music for people who liked it. But, I mean, they were on the first island, and they're wandering around. It's not a stretch to imagine that they stumbled over the original visitor center.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know if we discussed it, but the T-Rex, her name is Rexy. Okay. The Jurassic Park fan community calls her Rexy.
I love that.
And you can tell it's her because she's got all the scars from the raptor fight in the first movie.
Oh, cool.
So you can tell it's the same T-Rex. And that's why they use the flare, because she got used to the flare meaning food. So they use that to feed her now. which I think is funny. And it's like, and I like that, you know, she's like, this is my island. And, oh, look, here's some, nope, my island. And she fights for it. And I like that she has her kind of reconciliation with Blue at the end. So she forgives Raptor Kind. And it's like, I know this is completely unrealistic. These dinosaurs are not that smart. Blue would not have given a little go-ahead nod to Owen and the crew to get out of, go on, get out of here. Gave him a little head nod. I'm like, that is so not what a raptor would do, but it's great. I love it.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's, what was I going to say? So, didn't in Lost World, like, maybe this is just like a continuity thing or like an incongruity, didn't the bad guy, like Hammond's nephew, say that they destroyed all the dinosaurs on Isa Nublar?
I don't remember him saying that at all.
Okay. I remember, like, when I watched it this morning, there's a scene before Malcolm goes and sees Hammond. That he's just kind of in this, like, hallway of this big, like, McMansion. And I hate that word, but there it is. And he's just kind of having this, like, tete-a-tete with Hammond's nephew. And just being like, he's like, oh, you know, you breached the NDA, and you weren't supposed to do that. And, like, we've destroyed all the animals on Isa Nublar.
I have not seen this scene. This must be a deleted scene.
Okay.
So you're watching a different version of the movie than I am. That's interesting. I'm going to go digging in the DVD and find it. And I did not know that. Interesting.
Interesting, yeah.
And because in at the end of the first book, they do bomb the island.
Okay.
But in the copy of the movie that I have, that scene is not in there.
Interesting. Yeah, like it's right at the beginning of the movie because Malcolm's on the subway and that guy's, the subway passenger's kind of making fun of him, and then he goes to Hammond's house, and like I said, right before he sees Hammond, he's in the hallway.
Well, yeah there's a scene with Malcolm and Timmy and Lex in the hallway with him.
Yeah.
But he never said, and we killed all the... He did say to Malcolm, you breached the NDA. I'm sorry, I thought you said he was talking to Timmy. There was a whole scene with this, just Timmy.
Yeah, no, sorry.
But if it's the one with Malcolm, I did see that. So he did say you breached the NDA and not everyone, you know, but I didn't remember him saying that they nuked the island, that all the animals are dead.
Okay, maybe I have a deleted scene. Maybe it's another version because, or else I made something up in my head. And
yeah, now I want to go back and watch this.
Yeah, if I did make it up in my head, I'm sorry to my listeners and to you, Kelly, because this didn't happen in the movie. So
now we have a research project.
Now we have a research problem. So how excited are you for Jurassic World 2 Fallen Kingdom?
I am very excited. It's funny because when... I don't remember if it was when they were, like, talking about making the second Jurassic Park movie, but I don't think so. I think they had planned, like, to have Crichton write a book. So I think it was when they were talking about making the third movie, but it might have even been after they had made the third movie and were talking about a fourth one. But at some point, there was discussion about, hey, how about for the next Jurassic Park movie, we make human-raptor hybrid soldiers?
I heard that, yeah.
And I was like, oh, God, please no.
Yeah.
It's like, that might actually be a fun movie for not Jurassic Park, but that is not Jurassic Park.
Yeah.
But what we have now is raptor... other critter hybrid trying to be used as soldiers, but I feel like it was done in a very different way, and I'm not mad at this concept, like, because I think that's what's happening, because we have the Indoraptor, and I think this is a continuation of the military project.
Interesting.
That gets out. Like, I think they're going to spend part of the time on the island, because obviously that's in the preview, but there's definitely going to be scenes in the city, and I think it's in London, and I think it's going to be tied to their military project. But anyway.
Interesting.
I don't actually know any of this, by the way. Like, I haven't been researching or anything. This is just me having seen the preview and reading into, like, what ideas have been tossed out over the years for a Jurassic Park sequel. So I'm kind of integrating a bunch of stuff that I've heard. So
yeah, I do remember, like, and if memory serves, you're right. It was after Jurassic Park 3. They were trying to find ways, because of course it's like this big money maker for Universal. They're trying to find ways to continue it. And there was talk of, like, basically raptor human hybrid soldiers. And if I remember, it was something like, wouldn't it be cool if the raptors had machine guns? And I was just horrified reading that. I'm like, no, that would not be cool. You're right. In a separate movie, maybe.
Yeah, raptor people in a separate movie, that would be fun. But let's not go there with Jurassic Park, please.
Yeah. I'm very excited for Fallen Kingdom. Like the more it gets announced. Because, again, it's just that dinosaur just, like, squee internal child. That's like, oh my god, it's getting closer. So,
oh yeah, very excited.
I don't know about you.
I'm see it opening weekend and
yeah, me too. So on that note, it's probably a good time to end. Thank you. I always love chatting with you, but like talking to you about the Jurassic Park franchise is something I've wanted to do with you in the beginning, and this has just been so delightful as always.
Well, I enjoyed it too. Thank you for having me.
Yeah. So, where can people find you on the internet, Kelly?
People can visit my website, Collodion, Colloden, Collodion.com. And I'm also on Twitter as KW Sapphire, and I am also on DeviantArt as KW Sapphire.
Awesome. And I am on Twitter at PocketfulOfish. And yeah, that's pretty much for me. So I can't wait for our next topic, whenever that will be, wherever or whenever it'll be, I should say. And I guess I'll see you when I see you.
Okay, great.
Awesome. Thanks so much, Kelly.
Thank you.